Wild Bill and Calamity Jane are here, and now so are you. From Deadwood, South Dakota, this is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis.
Hello, everybody. I'm Paul Dennis, and I'm talking to you from the Real Deadwood in the Black Hills of South Dakota. And this is week two of the Real Deadwood Podcast, a variety show for fans of the award-winning HBO Deadwood series. And I'm here every week bringing you news, interviews, and entertainment from both Deadwoods. We've got a fantastic show for you today. We've got part two of the audio recording of the press conference that the Deadwood actors, the 11 of them that came here over the summer, and their press conference. I recorded it with the microphone of my camcorder, so you kind of have to listen pretty closely, but that's why I'm providing a transcript so that you can read along with what they're saying, and that will make it a little bit easier to understand. Plus, it will allow you to identify the voices maybe of some of the actors. Maybe it's kind of hard to tell who's talking when you're not actually seeing them. Now, I will have eventually have some video of the press conference, not the whole thing, but some little snips of video on the website as soon as I get time to do that. So that will be up there pretty soon, and you'll kind of, I think seeing the video will also help to picture who's where and who's saying what. Today we also have part two of my interview with Bobby V, who was here for the Cool Deadwood Night celebration last August. We're going to have Jerry Bryant this week from the Deadwood's Adams Museum and House, and we're going to talk to him about his involvement with HBO and the various departments and the research that he does for HBO through the Adams Museum and House. We're going to have part two of Alex's soundseeing tour of Mount Moriah Cemetery, and there's some very interesting information he has for us today. Last time we had music from Earl Brown's band. Earl Brown, of course, is Dan Doherty on the show, and his band Sacred Cowboys. We had a song from them. This time around, we're going to have a song from John Hawks' band. John Hawks, of course, is Saul Starr, and his band was here over the summer also, and his band is called King Straggler. So we're going to have a song from them. We also have an interview with Chuck Turbeville. He is one of the officials here in Deadwood. We're going to talk a little bit about gaming here in town and how that affects the town of Deadwood and what that's going to have in store for you when you come here to visit Deadwood. And we're also going to start out the show today with kind of a cool little deal. You hear at the very beginning of the show my little intro, you know, Wow Bill and Calamity Jane. I couldn't even begin to do that voice, but that voice and that voiceover was provided as a free service by a website called Radio Daddy, radiodaddy.com. I think I heard about Radio Daddy. I believe it was from Adam Curry's Daily Source Code podcast, which I listen to pretty regularly, the Podfather. And so I went there and checked it out, and sure enough, it's a fantastic thing. So after I put in my request and told him what I wanted to say, I guess I have, what do I have here? 1, 2, 3, 4 other voiceovers that some of the announcer type guys there did for me that I decided not to use because, of course, the one that I use is fantastic. It's exactly what I had in mind. And actually, that was the very first one that was done, so it was kind of hard to top that. But so we're going to play those, and I'm going to tell you who these guys are that did this. And who knows, maybe the way they did my intro would be suited to what you might have in mind if you're a podcaster. So this way you can go to Radio Daddy and you could even, you know, specifically ask for one of these guys. Now, when you go there, this is the little intro that you hear. It's a little flash intro. Check this out.
Hello and welcome to RadioDaddy.com, home of free voiceovers and more. A community of top voiceover talent willing to help you get your station, website, or flash presentation that extra lift. Register today and gain access to this free service you won't find anywhere else. Enjoy your stay at RadioDaddy.com.
Now, here is the explanation they have on their website of how this works. It says, this site is being developed as a free service to allow exchange of voiceovers between radio stations worldwide. The premise of the site is simple. You need a voiceover recorded. You come to RadioDaddy.com, post your request, and a member records your voiceover as an MP3 file and uploads it back to Radio Daddy. You return to the site, download your free voiceover, and voila, new voice on your station. It's just that simple. It's absolutely free, and all we ask is that you do some voiceovers for our members as well. Well, I think you can tell that my voice is not in the same league as the guy who does the intro for the Real Deadwood podcast. And I think the idea is that if you are a radio station and you're like a one or two man radio station and you want some promos that are in a different voice, then the idea is that you go to these guys or at Radio Daddy. They do the promo for you and then you repay the favor and do a promo for them. So they have a different voice on their station. But in the case of the podcasting category, the podcasters, are just amateurs like me, and I don't think they're expected to be of professional quality. So it's more of a one-way street, I believe, on the podcasting side than it is possibly, for the broadcast radio or for the internet radio. So I'm, more than grateful to, not only to the person who I accepted. His name is Jeff Straub, and I'll get into the profile, his profile, and the profiles of some of these other guys in just a little bit here. But I'm very grateful because I think he really nailed it. What you do is not only do you put what you want them to say, but you kind of give them a hint as to what style you're looking for. And I had put something like tough guy, you know, in your face, kind of an attitude. And like I said, as far as I'm concerned, he hit it out of the park right off the bat. So now I'm going to play you some of the other attempts that were done here for this intro. And again, they're going to say the same thing as Jeff did, but you're going to hear quite a few different styles. Now, the first guy I have here, his name is Bob Taylor, and he's from Buffalo, New York. His website is www.bobtaylorproductions.com. And this is how he interpreted the intro for the Real Deadwood podcast.
Wild Bill and Calamity Jane are here, and now so are you. From Deadwood, South Dakota, the Real Deadwood podcast with Paul Dennis. This is the Real Deadwood podcast with Paul Dennis.
Okay, thank you, Bob Taylor. This next guy's name is Mark Hanna, and I believe he actually is more of an amateur. He had some voiceovers done for him by some of the pros, and I think he decided to take a crack at kind of a payback deal here. But what I found out from trying to research him on the web is that he works for a real estate company, Weikert Real Estate Affiliates, and is a business consultant in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So here we go with Mark Hanna.
Wild Bill and Calamity Jane are here, and now so are you. From Deadwood, South Dakota, this is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis. This is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis.
Okay, now the next two guys, I couldn't really get a name on them. They just kind of had little, contact handle type things. This guy's name next is Tower Space. And he actually left me a little note. It says, "Hey, Paul, here goes my try at it. I enjoyed Deadwood as I paid a visit during an 8,500-mile multi-state trip. Got to visit their legendary rodeo arena, different and nicer than most. Maybe I'll lose enough weight in the next year or two and get to ride a saddle bronc there. Crossing fingers. South Dakota was pretty neat, especially Deadwood and toward Mount Rushmore. I'll be back to climb Harney Peak next year." So, and here, there's a little picture of him there, and it's a picture of a guy with a cowboy hat. So whoever Tower Space is, this is his shot at the Deadwood podcast intro. Here we go.
Wild Bill and Calamity Jane are here, and now so are you. From Deadwood, South Dakota, this is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis. This is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis.
Okay, now the last guy here, all he's identified himself as is Hippie. And they try to give like a little profile of these guys, and it says call letters, Channel X. And about all I could find on him is that apparently Channel X is an internet station, and his name is Rick the Hippie. So he got a little carried away on this one, and he left a note saying, I really had fun with this, and thanks for the challenge, basically. So this is Rick the Hippie, and let's see how he did it.
Wild Bill and Calamity Jane are here, and now so are you. From Deadwood, South Dakota,
This is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis. This is the Real Deadwood Podcast. Feel lucky? Well, do you, punk? This is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis. Wild Bill and Calamity Jane are here, and now so are you. From Deadwood, South Dakota, this is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis. This is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis. Paul Dennis. From Deadwood, South Dakota.
Okay, thank you, Rick the Hippie. So I guess he probably came in second, I would say, in terms of what I had in mind. But anyway, the guy that I'm using is his name is Jeff Straub, Straub. He's from Taylor, Texas, and his website is www.jeffradio.com, jeff radio.com. And he does all kinds of voiceovers, corporate radio, easy listening, top 40 country, you name it. He's got a great website, and he's got a lot of examples of his work. So this was the original. As you can hear, I had them do the intro, and then I had them do like a little ID thing that I play in the middle. And so this was the original thing that he sent me. Of course, I put the music behind it and everything from my CD, but here's the original.
Wild Bill and Calamity Jane are here, and now so are you. From Deadwood, South Dakota, this is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis. This is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis. This is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis.
Yeah, man. He got that job. Definitely has that Wolfman Jack thing kind of going on there. But so again, thanks a million to Jeff Straub, to Bob Taylor, to Mark Hanna, to Tower Space, and to Rick the Hippie, and to RadioDaddy.com for providing this fantastic resource for podcasters, for radio stations. They have, you know, the different categories. Like I said, there's commercial radio, there's, like public radio. And, when you heard the intro that they have on the website, they said something about flash intros. So that means if you are a webmaster or someone who does websites and you want some kind of a voiceover or announcement for your flash intro, and I'm sure if you're a student even and you are doing a PowerPoint presentation and you want to have a kind of a professional sounding thing that your teacher is going to be pretty impressed with, I think you could certainly go to Radio Daddy and see if somebody will take a shot at doing something for you there. So again, thanks for them, RadioDaddy.com. Okay, let's get on with the show now, and let's hear from the Deadwood actors. This is part two of their press conference when they were here in June of the summer of 2005.
How many of you is this your first trip?
Me? How about South Dakota?
Yeah,
Hawkeye's a Hall of Fame bronc buster. My uncle's a big rodeo fan. When we first started the season, for his home Christmas, I said, "Yeah, there's a couple of cowboys that are on our show."
That's the old.
I said, "Hawkeye Henson, Gary Butte. Monty Henson's on your show?" I said, "Yeah." "Hawkeye, Monty Henson's on your show." That's when I found out the Michael Jordan bronc buster.
Michael got a little bit more. Keep eating on me till the cows come home. they didn't have stop man. He flipped over his back. And other than that, Earl beat on me. Well, he tagged me right under the cheek. One time he got me with a knuckle on the cheek, and that woke me up. It was about midnight.
That's a long day.
I'm glad he didn't get a good solid punch.
Earl won the lottery on the chest of
Well, everybody that knows me enjoys the fact that I did get the shit beat out of
me.
Most of us haven't had a chance because we got in about midnight.
We drove past them, and they were pointed out to us as we went
blowing by. You know? We went to a couple of hotels. We weren't sure where we were staying.
No. Exactly.
Right. I got the pleasure yesterday of being in Jerry Bryant's Rhino, his little four-wheel drive ATV. He took me everywhere. We're on dirt roads, man. He took me to these old abandoned mines and showed me where all the animals live.
How long does it take you guys to get used to the vernacular of the show, like when you start going and see that kind of a process to get back into that? It
takes me no time, but these guys are pretty slow. It actually does take a while to start to get into the rhythm. It does take, I think, I noticed last year, I sort of felt like we all found our feet about episode 3. We started to find the rhythm. I wasn't really in much. I was watching these guys.
I felt fine right away.
Yeah. Well, you didn't look fine.
I got to read it 2 or 3 times to figure out what it even means.
That's true.
I
listened
to
you
2 or 3 times. Inspired.
How many of you guys watch it with the captions on?
There you go. Honest people in the back.
I'm in the show. And
we
I'm watching it. With the captions on.
You're in the show?
But this one makes it so good. It plays with so many levels. It's funny and it's tragic and it's horrifying and it's all those things in one fell swoop. So you can watch it 3 or 4 times.
I've heard a lot here in Deadwood about the fact that David Milch is following kind of a Shakespearean theme, really, in the way he writes.
Especially
Yumi's character. I think that
could
be said.
I don't know where
he is.
He called.
Well, he probably had a job.
Well,
he's always working.
What does that mean?
Do you know of David's background before television?
Not a lot.
He was the chair of the English department at Yale. He's a summa cum laude graduate, and Robert Penn Warren was his mentor. Mr. Warren took him under wing. And Mr. Warren got him hired on at Yale. Because David was unhirable by Yale standards. He told this story in the New Yorker, so it's you know. So that's he was at Yale. He was the chair. When Mr. Warren retired, he was the chair of the department. Until Stephen Bochco approached him about writing for Hill Street Blues. And his first script was the 3rd season opener, Hill Street, which won the Emmy. And I said, well, what made you leave academia? He said, well, I'm an absolute unrepentant gambler who put together one hell of a stake in television. So that's what led him into. And he's the smartest son of a bitch I've ever encountered.
Sure.
It's
this side of you, yeah.
A friend of mine was in his writing class at Yale, and he said one day a man walked into the classroom with a gun and pointed it at the students. And David had paid this guy to come in and do it, and he explained later that that was real drama.
Well, and when David came to Yale, I was living in Connecticut at the time, and he called me up and said, I'm going to show Deadwood at Yale to the writing students and the drama students, so I want you to come and do the Q&A. Because I've worked with anyone to talk about, me to talk about the processes and actors and Susan was these scripts and everything, difficulty of that. So they were having a screening at the law school auditorium, and as we were walking up to the auditorium, David said, you know, I originally started out here at the law school before I got kicked out. He got kicked out and said, yeah, all behind some stupid gunfight with the Cape Police. David had taken about 4 hits of brown microdot acid and had a gun and was shooting streetlights out. And the thing that, it wasn't so much the gun that got him in trouble, it was the conversation with the cop, which they're going to take him into custody. And David said, I refuse to continue this conversation until your badge stops melting. They locked him up.
So you're beginning to see now.
Your dad was friends with David.
Yeah, my father was a professor. He ran the Graduate School of Fine Arts at Yale at the time. And so David, they had a lot of friends, colleagues, and so my dad knew David a bit then, and they reconnected with David and I did Brooklyn South. My father came out to visit me. They hadn't seen each other since the days, and so stories started getting thrown around, and some of them that I'd never heard about my father. And pretty interesting. But
that's Titus Welliver there at the end talking about his dad knowing David Milchin. When my wife and I were at the Deadwood set at the Melody Ranch in Santa Clarita, California last March, we got to go into the makeup trailer that's run by John Rizzo, who's the head of makeup there, who just won an Emmy Award for the show. And at the time, Ian McShane was sitting in one chair and Titus Welliver was sitting in another, and they were getting made up. They have dirt that they squirt. They mix it with kind of an oil or grease kind of a thing, and then they put it on. They dab it on with little sponges, pieces of sponge on their face and everything to make them look dirty. And so anyway, Titus was doing some unbelievably funny impressions of David Milch and lots of Jack Nicholson and Christopher Walken. And the idea was that he was doing impressions of them auditioning for the part of Al Swearengen. Ian McShane was absolutely in stitches. He almost fell out of the makeup chair. We did get to go to the premiere, the second season premiere at the Grauman's Chinese Theater. But if they had finished shooting on time like they were supposed to, we would also have been able to go to the wrap party, WRAP party. And that's when, so actually what happened was we were there for almost a week, and then it was about 2 or 3 weeks after we left that they actually finished shooting and had the wrap party. And that was when Titus did his whole routine and everything. Everybody said it was so hilarious. And when I asked him about it when they were here, I asked him if I could get some of it on tape, and he said, well, no, but he did, there's some of it is on a website, and I never did get from him the exact address of where that was, so I'm going to try to locate that, because it's absolutely hilarious, the impressions that he does. And you heard somebody refer to, why don't you do David, and he said, no, it'll be out of context, but I mean, it's just dead on. He's very, very talented guy, Titus Welliver. Okay, our next person that we're going to hear from is Jerry Bryant, and he appears on the special features DVD. You'll hear me talk about that in just a minute, along with my wife, Mary Kopko. So he is going to tell us a little bit about the Metz Massacre that happens in the very first episode of Season 1. So here we go with Jerry Bryant. My guest here is Jerry Bryant. Everyone knows him from the special features DVD, standing there telling us about Deadwood and everything. And we're going to find out tonight some of the stories of the real Deadwood. Let me find out, first of all, how you got involved in this whole Deadwood thing. How'd you get hooked up with the Adams Museum?
Well, I'm a historical archaeologist, and I was between jobs and giving a paper, I think, for the Lawrence County Historical Society one day. And this crazy woman ran up to me waving her arms, which was Mary Kopko.
Which is my wife, yeah.
And then she said, she explained what she needed me for, and that was kind of a liaison between HBO and the Adams Museum in Deadwood, and to do research, continuing research effort on the people of this vicinity.
So you're pretty much dedicated to whenever somebody from HBO, whether, now what are the different departments you work with HBO?
Well, I've worked with, I've actually given several of my manuscripts to the writers of different characters that I've developed, and they're not fictional characters, they're the real characters. And I've also worked with sets. When they were getting ready to build their mining site, they conferred with me.
That was right at the beginning of the second season, right? Last season?
Two or three times a day. Yeah, it was pretty hectic back then. I probably sent them, 100 or more pictures of stamp mills and different things, even detailed drawings of how quartz mills worked and things like that.
And who were the people that you worked with? What were some of their names?
Michael Kelly, Ernie Bishop. I've also worked with the makeup people, John Rizzo.
Who's your friend and mine.
John is just a gas.
He's crazy, yep. Hopefully we'll be getting some interviews with him as well.
Yeah.
I'd kind of like to find out a little bit about some of the stories that you may have seen portrayed, some of the episodes of Deadwood, and if we want to sort of see was that really the way it happened? And if not, you know, how did it really happen? So, for example, in the first season, we had the Metz Massacre, where the, you know, the immigrants came to town and they didn't quite, wasn't their cup of tea. And then on their way out of town, they were massacred, killed by the bandits, by Persimmon right. Phil. And they tried to make it look like the Indians had done it and everything. Now, I understand that was based on actual,
well,
actual
was,
occurrences to
yeah,
some degree.
It was based on an actual massacre. Okay, Metz was a baker in Custer City, and he had sold out his bakery and had all the cash in his pocket, and him and his wife.
And they were, what, Norwegian or something, immigrants? They portrayed them, what they call them, squareheads and stuff on the show. Yeah. Like they were just right off the, you wouldn't say off the boat, but I mean that they like were just
well,
right
weren't.
From the old company.
They weren't.
Okay,
but
in real
this
life.
Was a little rough for them. So they were going back to Denver.
I see.
As they were,
back to Denver? They had come from Denver?
Yeah, they had migrated up from Denver during the rush, the uh-huh. initial part of the rush, and he'd started a bakery. He found someone that wanted to buy him out, so he got the money. Him and his wife and a young black lady who was a maid started south to back to Denver, and they went through Red Canyon, and they were massacred. Now, was it Indians or white guys?
Uh-huh.
Well, the guy who found them was a man named Robert Florman, who was very early miner in here. Mm-hmm. He had already come all the way up to Deadwood and made claims and had went back to Denver for his wife. So he had a whole group of people he was guiding north through Red Canyon to Custer and then on up through Hill City to Deadwood, and they found him. When they arrived there on the scene, and it would have been such a good thing to see in the television series, when they arrived and found the Metz Massacre, most of the men that were in the wagon train, or whatever you'd like to call it,
mm-hmm.
became scared, frightened, and started to run off towards Custer. Robert Florman pulled his gun and said, anybody that leaves is going to die right here with the Metzes.
Now, you know this from writings, or from
yeah.
journals, or from
newspaper
accounts?
Both. Uh-huh. And so Bob stayed, him and everybody that was there, mm-hmm. because of his gun, bang,
yeah.
bang, and they found the wife and Metz and got them fixed up, cleaned up, to take back into town, but they didn't mm-hmm. find the black lady.
Now, did they cut them up to make them, supposedly in the show, didn't they sort of cut them up because you saw a wolf or something pulling an arm or a leg or some body part, and you get the impression
so.
that they like dismembered them to some degree to make it look like the Indians would do that.
I think what was there were bodies with arrows in them, some bullets, and Metz may have been scalped, which would, you know, be their evidence.
Right.
The smoking gun, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
that the Native Americans had swooped down from the sides of the canyon. And
did them in.
Yeah. The primary thing that was gone, though, was the money.
Yeah, exactly, which would have been worthless to the Indians.
That's right.
Right.
So
a little bit of a giveaway right there.
Yeah, this is a dichotomy going on. Later on, when they went back out, they did find the black one. And apparently she had saved $5, and it was still clenched in her hand, and she was dead where they'd shot her, 100 yards away from the massacre site. They weren't the only massacres that have occurred, you know, mm-hmm. on the road to Deadwood, or from Deadwood in this case.
Well, when you're carrying a lot of money, word spreads pretty
spreads
quick.
Real quick.
Exactly.
Matter of fact, one of the theories that I'd heard from somebody, they thought it was soldier. Who else could get that close?
An inside job.
Yeah, ride right up there, do your business, set everything up.
Do them in and yep. grab the bucks.
Mm-hmm.
The people that found them then came back into town and reported this whole thing, and then that's how it got into the papers.
Yeah, they came into Custer, and then they went north to what was Hillio Camp at that time, now Hill City, and then on up into Deadwood.
And then, of course, Wild Bill said to Seth Bullock, let's go out there and look around, and you're going to take... Oh, wait, no, that wasn't it.
No, that wasn't quite the way it
okay,
happened.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it was a very tall German by the name of Robert Florman, who came upon him, pulled a gun, and kept everybody there so they could get everybody, mm-hmm. all the belongings back together that were there scattered everywhere.
Now, what about, they were in a wagon, obviously, right? Did mm-hmm. they find the wagon and the horses, and were those just
I don't know whether they found
scattered.
The horses or not. I know Bob Florman had a six-horse hitch himself, a very large six-horse hitch with the Bain wagon.
Very interesting, Jerry. Very interesting. So what I'm going to be doing is alternating Jerry and Mary, who is the director of the Adams Museum and House, from show to show. And they're the ones who will be telling us stories of the real Deadwood as researched by the Adams Museum staff, and as provided to David Milch and to the people at HBO Deadwood to make the show as incredibly accurate and wonderfully historically correct as it is.
This is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis.
Okay, my next guest is someone who was on the first show last time, and again, I'm going to have a little bit of a medley here of some of his music so that it'll kind of jog your memory, or in case you are not old enough to remember this music, it'll give you a little taste of his artistry. So here we go with some music from my next guest, and take a listen.
If you found another guy who satisfies you more than I do, run to him. I'll step aside. If you think his lips can kiss you better than my lips can kiss you, run to him. Forget my pride. Please don't ask about Barbara. Don't ask me if she's found somebody new, 'cause I would try to smile, but in a little while my tears would show, and then you'd know it's true. Please don't ask about Barbara.
'Cause a night has a thousand eyes, and a thousand eyes will see me through, and no matter what I do.
So remember when you tell those little white lies that the night has a thousand eyes.
And, of course, that's Bobby V, and he was here for Cool Deadwood Nights in August of 05. And this is part two of the interview I did with him, so here we go with Bobby V. From the time that you started in the music business, what is one of the, in terms of change, what's one of the biggest good changes you've seen, and what's one of the biggest bad changes you've seen?
Well, it's just everything is so different now. I mean, the technical part of it, is you know, we've gone from my first record was recorded as a mono record in Minneapolis, and then you know, stereo wasn't far behind. It was three track after that, and most of my hit records were recorded on three track, and then it progressed into eight tracks and 12 tracks and 16 tracks and into infinity, and now of course everything's digital and so I've been. And the process is recorded of recording has changed a lot because of that. Records used to be done live, and as soon as we had the extra tracks, they started tracking them. And
assembly line.
Yeah, right. So I'm working on a new album, and it's a new album of old songs. At this point in my life, I have my own case of nostalgia that I'm dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Of your own old songs, or just like old standards?
Actually, some of my own old songs, but other Save the Last Dance for me, a song that the Drifters have.
Not like Rod Stewart though, with songs from the 20s.
No, not
the
that
Frank
far
Sinatra.
Back.
Kind of a genre, kind
but
of a deal.
the same kind of salute to the time period, because there were some wonderful songs that came out that I would love to have recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And we're approaching that live, and that's fun for the rhythm section and all the vocals. And
well,
then
that
we'll
does
do
seem to be a
sweeping.
Trend. A lot of groups are just wanting to plug in five amps and turn on five microphones and just
rehearse it and do it.
Almost like a live. Thing, a live studio album.
Right, because you get the feel to it, and that's one of the things that sometimes just gets pasteurized out of the whole equation.
Absolutely, yep, the whole chemistry that's happening and everything, yeah. Well, how many dates do you do nowadays? I mean, how often do you tour?
It really varies. I'll probably do about 80 dates this year. It goes from anywhere from 80 to 100, 110.
Is it a mixture of you on tour, or sometimes there's the whole show that will go on tour?
It's kind of a split, about half and half. We're going over to England this fall. We'll do 24 shows over there. that's been a great marketplace for all American rock and roll.
Absolutely.
And it's a place that I went to, you know, in 1960 for the first time. So wow. I love going back there. I got a lot of friends, and I think it's sort of the Deadwood thing. There's so much history there,
yep.
And it's so visible, and it's so accessible.
Well, you know, the number one, the world authority on Wild Bill Hickok lives in England. Joseph Rosa is the number one biographer and expert on Wild Bill Hickok, and knows the whole Hickok family and the cousins and aunts and uncles, and has written probably 4 or 5 books. Was here, I think, year before last for the big book festival that we had here, and which is coming up here again pretty soon. Yeah. He's an interesting guy to talk to.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. I didn't realize that, but I do know that there's a tremendous amount of interest in Great Britain about America and the
Cowboys.
The Dakotas and the Sioux Indian and the Custer's Last Stand. And by the same token, they love all of the good stuff that we have exported in this country. Mm-hmm. Music, Dixieland, jazz, pop music, it doesn't matter what it is.
And they were the first ones to introduce us to our own form of music, which was the blues. No one paid attention to the black artists here.
That's right.
But then when Eric Clapton and the rock and roll kids of the day discovered it there, fed it back to us.
They brought it to the surface.
That was the big blues resurgence back then, too.
Yeah, that's right.
So how many guys are in your band right now?
It's a rhythm section. I've got 4 guys and myself and a sound man that we travel together. We in the last couple of years, I've been adding...
And if some of these guys have been with you, or are these all
Yeah,
I've guys?
Got 2 sons in the band.
Oh, okay.
Jeff and Tom. Jeff plays drums. Tommy's a bass player.
Uh-huh.
And they've been working with me for, traveling with me for 12, 13 years now.
Uh-huh.
The leader of the band, the guitar player, R. Stevens, has been with me for 23 years.
Wow.
And the keyboard player has been with me for 5 years. His name is George Maurer.
Uh-huh.
And we're... it's an interesting time in my life because we do such a variety of venues. We're doing... some symphony shows. The symphony audience is my age.
Uh-huh.
And they're looking for a nice, comfortable evening, a good place to park,
yeah.
A good place to bring their wife to, and go have dinner
and
before.
Good players.
Right. And so that.
Do you guys do the arrangements then?
We do. George, the keyboard player, does the. He's a trained musician in that sense. And jazz player, wonderful player, and he does all the charts. And then we've got a guy that we send the skeleton arrangements to that maps them out for 60 pieces.
Wow, that must be awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's really fun. It reminds me more of my records than anything I've done because I had strings on all my records. And it's fun to hear.
Phil Spector wall of sound kind of a deal going on.
Right, exactly.
That's cool. Yeah.
And next time we'll have the conclusion of this interview with Bobby V, and he'll talk a little bit more about Deadwood and about the Midwest. Our next guest is my 16-year-old son, Alex, who was the tour guide at Mount Moriah Cemetery, the resting place of Wild Bill and Calamity Jane, over this last summer. And he is our sound-seeing tour guide, so he's going to tell us a little bit more about some of the people who are now resting at Mount Moriah Cemetery. Take it away, Alex.
So we're going to walk up this way now. Walk up Jerusalem Street. As we go up, I also want to point out the other street names that are coming across. They all are biblical names taken from Freemason beliefs, from the Freemason rituals and things like that. The Freemasons actually played a pretty important role in the development, not only of Mount Moriah, but all of Deadwood. We do still have an active Masonic temple. There are still active Freemasons here in town. Mount Moriah actually derives its name from the Freemason belief that it was where King Solomon's temple sat on as it overlooked the town. And if you look pretty much anywhere from any point in the cemetery, you can see the town. So it kind of works out like that. We're going to go down Boaz Street here. As we walk through this area of the cemetery, you can kind of get a feel for the Victorian era. You can see the hand with the wreath, the little girl down below praying. Just behind this tree back there is an angel. During the Victorian era, I guess people decided, you know, I guess they were kind of closer to their family, no TV and that type of thing. So rather than just having a simple name and a date kind of flopped on the ground, they decided that they were going to do a little bit more, so they did some intricately carved things.
Are you getting any wind noise?
A little bit, but not too, too bad. So, still walking through the Victorian section. Well, not really necessarily the section, but the example of the cemetery, yeah. There's the angel that I was talking about. You may want to get a picture of it. Also, the grave that you just walked over, you see the little stones down here, the little ones, and you asked me what the little one over there was, and I told you it was a footstone. The footstones basically are like, kind of like fences, I guess. Like, they used to use fences. Yeah, it shows how long the person was. And you can really tell footstones from headstones, because on the top, it'll either say mother, father, like this one here says father. We'll see one that says mother. That one says father. Or it'll have the initials of the person, or it'll say son, daughter, that type of thing. So that's really how you can tell. And besides the fact that it's smaller than most stones are.
So is it a bad thing for me to be walking on them?
Well, they're dead, so I don't think they're going to mind, yeah. Not so much. They need to come in here and rake some of these pine needles, though. So, yep, the angel right here. I guess I can go into some of the different art on there, I guess, if you want to call it that. You see this little monument thing over here, the little stone thing. That's actually not a stone. It's made of metal, a white bronze, which is actually pure zinc, which when it was set out here was white, but due to the fact that it was left to the elements, it did form the bluish color, and it also has the like the rust color on it from the tour buses, which there's one right there going by and kicking up the dust and everything. You can see the lamb on the side there. That signifies that there's a child buried here. Her name was Ella Carter. She was 6 years old when she died. The draperies that you see just above the lamb are hung up like that. That kind of set the stage into the afterlife. It shows the acceptance of the death of the girl Ella, who was buried here. I guess she was probably sick or something, and her parents accepted that when she died, you know, it was probably a better thing. So you can kind of see that. Also, another really, really good example of Victorian era style is this tree here. You see the names of the family carved on it. Family tree. Get it? Mm-hmm. Also, it's cut off about midway down to show that the tree was probably cut down to the prime of its life. Maybe the people were cut down to the prime of their lives. Also, this little stone here that says Nora, she is a stump because she was only 25 days old. So that's why she hasn't even grown into a full tree.
And you can see a lot of what we're talking about here, what Alex is telling us about, on the Real Deadwood podcast website. There are photographs there of the graves and the tombstones that are being talked about. Also, I am going to have some video up there by the, hopefully you'll see it up there pretty quickly. And I'm going to also have a panorama, a 360-degree panorama, where you can kind of slide your cursor and spin around and look in all directions and see what Mount Moriah looks like. Our next segment here is going to be some music. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, John Hawks, who is Saul Starr, his band is King Straggler. And this is a tune that is on their CD. You can get it at kingstraggler.com, of all places. It's called A Good Man, and here's John Hawks.
Tonight, what we play here stays here.
If I could, I'd say these words. I am a good man. And if I could, I'd make it hurt. I am
good man. A good man commits. A good man doesn't spin. A good man opens every door. A good man don't make out with whores. Someday I'm gonna say these words. I am a good man. Someday I'm gonna make it hurt. I am a good man. A good man's for real. A good man can feel. A good man don't put his fist through walls. A good man don't stay down when he falls. Haunted by my youth, suffocated truth. Piece of me has to die before I find the strength to fly. Then I'm gonna say these words. I am a good man. And I'm gonna make it hurt. I am a good man.
Father's son, always on the run, searching for the one and embracing none.
I am a good man. I am a good man.
And that was John Hawks, Rodney Eastman, Brentley Gore, Danny Thompson, and Dan Gordon, known as King Straggler, Straggler. And again, you can find out all about them at their website, www.kingstraggler.com. Also, again, at www.realdeadwoodpodcast.com, you can see photos of King Straggler playing at the Adams Museum. And I'm there kind of sitting in with them with my guitar. You can catch me performing with King Straggler. Our final segment today is going to be our local Deadwood segment, and it's going to feature Chuck Turbeville. I mentioned earlier that he is one of the Deadwood officials, and you'll hear exactly what his title is and what his jobs are. And you're going to hear some interesting things about the city of Deadwood and about the gaming, gambling situation. And so here we go with Chuck Turbeville. My guest right now on the Real Deadwood podcast is Chuck Turbeville. And what exactly is your full title? You have two titles, right? You have a city title and a state title.
Yes, I do. My city title is I'm the executive director of the Deadwood Economic Development Corporation. And my state title is I am a member of the South Dakota House of Representatives from District 31, which is the Deadwood Lead and Spearfish area.
The population of Deadwood, I see it anywhere from 1,300 to, it's no more than 2,000 for sure. It's usually more 1,300, 1,500. But because of gaming and the gaming revenue that Deadwood pulls in, for a town its size, the Deadwood money is fairly important to the state, right, at a state level?
Well, absolutely. The population in Deadwood, Deadwood and Lead in the 2000 census lost more people proportionally than any other state in South Dakota or any other city in South Dakota. Deadwood's population might be around 1,400. Uh-huh. It's listed as 1,380, but it's holding pretty steady. We don't have the out-migration that we had a few years ago, but with the town of 1,400 residents, during the summer we employ 2,300 to 2,500 people. Uh-huh. So there's more people working Deadwood than
actually live there.
Yeah, and so we're an employment base for a large area here in western South Dakota. In addition to that, there's a lot of money that goes to support the state government. We pay
$100 million in just in August, according to this article I'm looking at right here.
Well, $100 million was the drop. The way the taxes run in Deadwood is that for every device, and a device is either a gaming machine or a blackjack table or a poker table, every July they have to pay $2,000 tax per device.
Right.
So you've got some of these casinos that have got 200-300 devices. That's a lot of money.
Now, the funny thing is that the law says, 30 devices per room or something?
That's correct.
And then they build these casinos in a long line and make it look like there's, three or four or five, sometimes six, seven buildings. Even though it's one big building, they put different fronts on them. And then they build walls in between the various sections.
Yep.
And then the law says something about, as long as the doorway between them is a certain width and a certain height, that constitutes, once you go through it, that constitutes another building. And so they get, that way they get 30 machines per section. And that's the only way that a casino can have 200, like you say, 200 devices. That means they have to have at least six, what would amount to six different buildings, even though they're all under one big roof.
No, that's absolutely true. And most of the buildings on Main Street Deadwood used to be retail stores, you know, whether it was a JCPenney store, or it might have been a dentist office. It could have been a
gas stations and stuff.
Whatever, yeah. And so when you
car dealership.
When you go through and you look at the old buildings, how many rooms were in that building when it existed 75 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And if you got a building that's relatively small, but it had three rooms, then you are allowed 90 devices for that small building because you get 30 per room.
Yep.
Now, if you build brand new, such as we've had a couple of casinos that build brand new,
like Cadillac Jack's.
Yep. And what they do is they do a long building just exactly like you talked about, and they divide it into seven rooms, so that you get 210 devices.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, that's just the way it is. It's not like anyone's trying to fool you, but the more devices you get, of course, is you know, the better it is for the owner of the casino.
And it seems like some of the casinos have card tables, and some don't really mess with card tables. Some mostly seem to go with the machines more. And of course, now with as popular as poker, Texas Hold'em and stuff the craze on TV has been a huge boon for the town of Deadwood, and some casinos actually took slot machines out and put in a couple more tables just to handle all that popularity.
Right now, I think we've got seven casinos in Deadwood that have card tables, and a couple of casinos like the Silverado. They took a large section of their casino, took the machines out, and converted it to a really nice poker room.
Mm-hmm.
And poker is very, very popular throughout the nation. And of course, in Deadwood, we get people coming from all over to play weekend poker. This past weekend, we had a huge, major poker tournament, and we drew people from all over the United States. So, yeah, it's... I think if you check the with the casinos, you'll find that perhaps a quarter or a dollar machine in the long run will probably bring you more net revenue than a poker table. You've got to have the poker tables if you're going to be a full service casino.
Well, and to draw the people in, and as they. The guy's playing poker, the wife's over behind
him,
playing on the machines and everything. So there we have some interesting information about the gambling and gaming here in the real Deadwood, South Dakota. Before we wrap things up this week, I'd like to, we've got a little bit of news going on here about our beloved HBO Deadwood show. It was supposed to come back on in March, but the news has come out in the last few days that HBO has pushed back the third season premiere of Deadwood to June, meaning that there's going to be more than a year between seasons. There's a show called a Tom Hanks show called Big Love a drama starring Bill Paxton as a Mormon polygamist. I guess he's supposed to have three wives. And they decided that they would give this new show the slot right after The Sopranos, which is going to come back on in March for its sixth season, and that's where Deadwood was going to be, following The Sopranos, which is obviously a fantastic lead-in. But since Love is a new show, I guess HBO decided it would benefit more from The Sopranos as the lead-in at 9 p.m. So a network representative said that Deadwood is going to actually be the lead-in itself in June for a couple other shows, Entourage and a new show called Lucky Louie. So it's going to be a long wait, and I guess we're just going to have to be patient, and I guess you're just going to have to come here to the Real Deadwood podcast for your fix for HBO Deadwood and to hear information on the actors and to hear from the actors themselves. Well, that's it for this episode of the Real Deadwood Podcast. Thanks so much for being with me this week, and I hope you'll be with me every week. Make sure you subscribe to the Real Deadwood Podcast feed through iTunes or directly from the website at realdeadwoodpodcast.com. You'll find video and pictures there from all the stories from each show, and you'll find links to all the websites that we've talked about. The music you're hearing, our theme song, is from my CD, Black Hills Gold. You can buy the entire CD from my website at pauldennis.com. There's a link on the website, the Real Deadwood Podcast website for that. Or you can go to iTunes and search for Paul Dennis and buy just this one song or as many songs as you want. Now, I'd love to hear what you think of our show. You can leave audio feedback by downloading Skype, the free phone over internet program from Skype.com. Once you've downloaded that, search the contacts for Real Deadwood Podcast. My Skype voicemail is always on, so you can leave me a message, and you can maybe hear yourself on the show if we decide to play your message on the podcast. Also, you can email me at realdeadwoodpodcast@gmail.com. So let us know what you think. Thanks so much for being with me today, and don't miss next week's show. From the Real Deadwood, South Dakota, this is Paul Dennis wishing you all the best.